Doe, Threon Losa, was clearly in a bad way, and Blackberry and Thethuthanang swam through together, one in front of her and one behind. As darkness closed in, the rain stopped. Hazel and Blackavar went back to the bank of the pool below the bridge. The sky cleared, and the oppression lifted as the thunder moved away eastward. But it was Fu Inlay before Bigwig himself came through the bridge with Silver and Fiver. It was as much as ever he could do to keep afloat, and when he reached the grating, he rolled over in the water, belly uppermost, like a dying fish. He drifted into the shallows and, with Silver's help, pulled himself out. Hazel and several of the others were waiting for him, but he cut them short with a flash of his old bullying manner.
"Come on, get out of the way," he said. "I'm going to sleep now, Hazel, and Frith help you if you say I'm not."
"That's how we go on, you see," said Hazel to the staring Blackavar. "You'll get used to it after a bit. Now, let's look for somewhere dry that no one else has found, and then perhaps we can sleep too." Every dry spot among the undergrowth seemed to be crowded with exhausted sleeping rabbits. After searching for a time, they found a fallen tree trunk, from the underside of which the bark had pulled away. They crept beneath the twigs and leaves, settled themselves in the smooth, curved trough, which soon took on some of the warmth of their bodies, and slept at once. Chapter 40. The Way Back. "Dame Hickory, Dame Hickory, here's a wolf at your door, his teeth grinning white, and his tongue wagging sore. 'Nay,' said Dame Hickory, 'ye false fairy, but a wolf 'twas indeed, and famished was he.'" Walter de la Mare, Dame Hickory. The first thing that Hazel learned the next morning was that Threon Losa had died during the night. Thethuthanang was distressed, for it was she who had picked Threon Losa as one of the more sturdy and sensible does in the mark, and persuaded her to join in the escape. After they had come through the bridge together, she had helped her ashore and fallen asleep beside her in the undergrowth, hoping that she might have recovered by the next day. But she had woken to find Threon Losa gone, and searching, had found her in a clump of reeds downstream. Evidently, the poor creature had felt that she was going to die, and in the manner of animals, had slipped away. The news depressed Hazel. He knew that they had been lucky to get so many does out of Ephrathah and to escape from Woundwort without having to stand and fight. The plan had been a good one, but the storm and the frightening efficiency of the Ephrathans had nearly defeated it. For all the courage of Bigwig and of Silver, they would have failed without Kahar. Now Kahar was going to leave them. Bigwig was wounded, and his own leg was none too good. With the does to look after, they would not be able to travel in the open as fast or as easily as they had on the way down from Watership. He would have liked to stay where they were for a few days, so that Bigwig could recover his strength and the does find their feet and get used to life outside of Warren. But the place, he realized, was hopelessly inhospitable. Although there was good cover, it was too wet for rabbits. Besides, it was evidently close to a road busier than any they had known. Soon after daylight, they began to hear and smell Hrudadol passing, not so far away as the breadth of a small field. There was continual disturbance, and the does in particular were startled and uneasy. Threon Losa's death made matters worse. Worried by the noise and vibration, and unable to feed, the does kept wandering downstream to look at the body and whisper together about the strange and dangerous surroundings. He consulted Blackberry, who pointed out that probably it would not be long before men found the boat. Then very likely several would be close by for some time. This decided Hazel that they'd better set out at once and try to reach somewhere where they could rest more easily. He could hear and smell that the swamp extended a long way downstream. With the road lying to the south, the only way seemed to be northward, over the bridge, which was in any case the way home. Taking Bigwig with him, he climbed the bank to the grass track. The first thing they saw was Kahar, picking slugs out of a clump of hemlock near the bridge. They came up to him without speaking and began to nibble the short grass nearby. After a little while, Kahar said,
Now you're getting modest, Mr. Hazel. All go fine, eh?
Yes. We'd never have done it without you, Cahar. I hear you turned up just in time to save Bigwig last night.
This bad rabbit pig fella, he go fight me? Plenty clever, too.
Yes, he got a shock for once, though.
Yeah, Mr. Hazel, soon his men come. What you do now?
We're going back to our warren, Cahar, if we can get there.
He's finish here now for me. I go to Big Water.
Shall we see you again, Cahar?
You go back hills? Stay there?
Yes, we mean to get there. It's going to be hard going with so many rabbits, and there'll be Ephrafin patrols to dodge, I expect.
You get there. Later on is winter. Plenty cold. Plenty storm on Big Water. Plenty bird come in. Then I come back, see where you live.
Don't forget then, Cahar, will you? Said Bigwig. We shall be looking out for you. Come down suddenly, like you did last night.
Yeah. Frighten all mothers and little rabbits. All little Bigwigs ran away.
Cahar arched his wings and rose into the air. He flew over the parapet of the bridge and upstream. Then he turned in a circle to the left, came back over the grass track, and flew straight down it, skimming just over the rabbits' heads. He gave one of his raucous cries and was gone to the southward. They gazed after him as he disappeared above the trees.
"Oh, fly away, great bird so white," said Bigwig. "You know, he made me feel I could fly too. That big water, I wish I could see it."
As they continued to look in the direction where Cahar had gone, Hazel noticed for the first time a cottage at the far end of the track, where the grass sloped up to join the road. A man, taking care to keep still, was leaning over the hedge and watching them intently. Hazel stamped and bolted into the undergrowth of the swamp, with Bigwig hard on his heels.
"You know what he's thinking about?" said Bigwig. "He's thinking about the vegetables in his garden."
"I know," replied Hazel, "and we shan't be able to keep this lot away from them once they get the idea into their heads. The quicker we push on, the better."
Shortly afterward, the rabbits set out across the park to the north. Bigwig soon found that he was not up to a long journey. His wound was painful, and the shoulder muscle would not stand hard use. Hazel was still lame, and the does, though willing and obedient, showed that they knew little about the life of Hlessel. It was a trying time. In the days that followed, days of clear sky and fine weather, Blackavar proved his worth again and again, until Hazel came to rely on him as much as on any of his veterans. There was a great deal more to him than anyone could have guessed. When Bigwig had determined not to come out of Ephrafar without Blackavar, he had been moved entirely by pity for a miserable, helpless victim of Wundworth's ruthlessness. It turned out, however, that Blackavar, when not crushed by humiliation and ill-treatment, was a good cut above the ordinary. His story was an unusual one. His mother had not been born an Ephrafan. She had been one of the rabbits taken prisoner when Wundworth attacked the warren at Nutley Copse. She had mated with an Ephrafan captain and had had no other mate. He had been killed on wide patrol. Blackavar, proud of his father, had grown up with the resolve to become an officer in Ausla. But together with this, and paradoxically, there had come to him from his mother a certain resentment against Ephrafa, and a feeling that they should have no more of him than he cared to give them. Captain Mallow, to whose mark, the right four, he had been sent on trial, had praised his courage and endurance, but had not failed to notice the proud detachment of his nature. When the right flank needed a junior officer to help Captain Chervil, it was Avens and not Blackavar who had been selected by the council. Blackavar, who knew his own worth, felt convinced that his mother's blood had prejudiced the council against him. While still full of his wrongs, he had met Heisenfley and made himself a secret friend and adviser of the discontented does in the right four. He had begun by urging them to try to get the council's consent to their leaving Ephrafa, If they had succeeded, they would have asked for him to be allowed to go with them. But when the Doe's deputation to the council failed, Blackavar turned to the idea of escape. At first he had meant to take the Doe's with him, but his nerve, strained to the limit, as Bigwig's had been, by the dangers and uncertainties of conspiracy, had given way, and in the end he had simply made a dash on his own to be caught by Campion. Under the punishment inflicted by the council, his mercurial spirit had fallen low, and he had become the apathetic wretch the sight of whom had so much shocked Bigwig. Yet, at the whispered message in the Hraka pit, this spirit had flickered up again, wherein others might well have failed to do so, and he had been ready to set all on the hazard and have another shot. Now, free among these easy-going strangers, he saw himself as a trained Ephrafan, using his skill to help them in their need. Although he did all that he was told, he did not hesitate to make suggestions as well, particularly when it came to reconnoitering and looking for signs of danger. Hazel, who was ready to accept advice from anybody when he thought it was good, listened to most of what he said, and was content to leave it to Bigwig, for whom, naturally, Blackavar entertained a tremendous respect, to see that he did not overreach himself in his warm-hearted, rather candid zeal. After 2 or 3 days of slow, careful journeying, with many halts in cover, they found themselves, late one afternoon, once more in sight of Caesar's Belt, but further west than before, close to a little copse at the top of some rising ground. Everyone was tired, and when they had fed, "Evening sylphlay every day, just as you promised," said Heisenflay to Bigwig. Bluebell and Speedwell suggested that it might be worthwhile to dig some scrapes in the light soil under the trees and live there for a day or two. Hazel felt willing enough, but Fiver needed persuasion.
"I know we can do with the rest, but somehow I don't altogether like it, Hazel Ra," he said. "I suppose I've got to try to think why."
"Not on my account," answered Hazel, "but I doubt you'll shift the others this time. One or two of these does are ready for mudder, as Kahar would say, and that's the real reason why Bluebell and the rest are prepared to be at the trouble of digging scrapes. Surely it'll be all right at that rate, won't it? You know what they say, rabbit underground, rabbit safe and sound."
"Well, you may be right," said Fiver. "That Vilthoril is a beautiful doe. I'd like a chance to get to know her better. After all, it's not natural to rabbits, is it? On and on, day after day."
Later, however, when Blackavar returned with Dandelion from a patrol they had undertaken on their own initiative, he came out more strongly against the idea.
"This is no place to stop, Hazel Ra," he said. "No wide patrol would bivouac here. It's fox country. We ought to try to get further before dark."
Bigwig's shoulder had been hurting him a good deal during the afternoon, and he felt low and surly. It seemed to him that Blackavar was being clever at other people's expense. If he got his way, they would have to go on, tired as they were, until they came to somewhere which was suitable by Ephrafan standards. There they would be safe, no more and no less than they would have been if they had stayed at this copse. But Blackavar would be the clever fellow who had saved them from a fox that had never existed outside his own fancy. His Ephrafan scoutcraft act was getting to be a bore. It was time someone called his bluff.
"There are likely to be foxes anywhere about the Downs," said Bigwig sharply. "Why is this fox country more than anywhere else?"
Tact was a quality which Blackavar valued about as much as Bigwig did, and now he made the worst possible reply.
"I can't exactly tell you why," he said. "I've formed a strong impression, but it's hard to explain quite what it's based on."
"Oh, an impression, eh?" sneered Bigwig. "Did you see any Hraka? Pick up any scent? Or was it just a message from little green mice singing under a toadstool?"
Blackavar felt hurt. Bigwig was the last rabbit he wanted to quarrel with.
"Ye think I'm a fool, then?"
he answered, his Ephrafan accent becoming more marked.
"No, there was neither Hraka nor scent. But I still think that this is a place where a fox comes. On these patrols we used to do, you know, we...
"Did you see or smell anything?" said Bigwig to Dandelion.
Well, I'm not really quite sure," said Dandelion. "I mean, Blackavar seems to know an awful lot about patrolling, and he asked me whether I didn't feel a sort of..."
"Well, we could go on like this all night," said Bigwig. "Blackavar, do you know that earlier this summer, before we had the benefit of your experience, we went for days across every kind of country, fields, heather, woods, downs, and never lost one rabbit?"
"It's the idea of scrapes, that's all," said Blackavar apologetically. "New scrapes get noticed, and digging can be heard a surprisingly long way, you know."
"Let him alone," said Hazel, before Bigwig could speak again. "You didn't get him out of Ephrafa to bully him. Look, Blackavar, I suppose I've got to decide this. I think you're probably right, and there is a certain amount of risk. But we're at risk all the time until we get back to our warren, and everyone's so tired that I think we might just as well stop here for a day or two. We shall be all the better for it."
Enough scrapes were finished by soon after sunset, and next day, sure enough, all the rabbits felt a great deal better for a night underground. As Hazel had foreseen, there was some mating and a scuffle or two, but no one was hurt. By the evening, a kind of holiday spirit prevailed. Hazel's leg was stronger, and Bigwig felt fitter than at any time since he went into Ephrafa. The does, harassed and bony 2 days before, were beginning to look quite sleek. On the second morning, Silfley did not begin until some time after dawn. A light wind was blowing straight into the north bank of the copse, where the scrapes had been dug, and Bluebell, when he came up, swore he could smell rabbits on it.
"That's old Holly pressing his chin glands for his Hazelra," he said. "A rabbit's sneeze on the morning breeze sets homesick hearts aglow."
"Sitting with his rump in a chicory clump and longing for a nice plump doe," replied Hazel.
"That won't do, Hazelra," said Bluebell. "He's got two does up there."
"Only hutch does," replied Hazel.
"I dare say they're fairly tough and fast by now,
but all the same, they'll never be quite like our own kind. Clover, for instance, she'd never go far from the hole on Silfley, because she knew she couldn't run as fast as we can. But these Ephrafan does, you see, they've been kept in by sentries all their lives. Yet now there aren't any. They wander about quite happily. Look at those two, right away under the bank there. They feel they can... Oh, great Frith!"
As he spoke, a tawny shape, dog-like, sprang out of the overhanging nut bushes as silently as light from behind a cloud. It landed between the two does, grabbed one by the neck, and dragged her up the bank in a flash. The wind veered, and the reek of fox came over the grass. With stamping and flashing of tails, every rabbit on the slope dashed for cover. Hazel and Bluebell found themselves crouched with Blackavar. The Ephrafan was matter-of-fact and detached.
"Poor little beast," he said. "You see, their instincts are weakened by life in the mark. Fancy feeding under bushes on the windward side of a wood. Never mind, Hazelra. These things happen. But look, I tell you what. Unless there are two Homble, which would be very bad luck, we've got till Neefrith at least to get away. That Homba won't be hunting any more for some time. I suggest we all move on as soon as we can."
With a word of agreement, Hazel went out to call the rabbits together. They made a scattered but swift run to the northeast, along the edge of a field of ripening wheat. No one spoke of the doe. They had covered more than 3/4 of a mile before Bigwig and Hazel halted to rest and to make sure that no one had fallen behind. As Blackavar came up with Heisenfley, Bigwig said,
"You told us how it would be, didn't you? And I was the one who wouldn't listen."
"Told you," said Blackavar. "I don't understand."
"That there was likely to be a fox."
"I don't remember, I'm afraid. But I don't see that any of us could possibly have known. Anyway, what's a doe, more or less?"
Bigwig looked at him in astonishment, but Blackavar, apparently unconcerned, either to stress what he had said or to break off the talk, simply began to nibble the grass. Bigwig, puzzled, moved away, and himself began to feed a little distance off, with Heisenfley and Hazel.
"What's he getting at?"
he asked after a while.
"You were all there when he warned us, 2 nights ago, that there was likely to be a fox. I treated him badly."
"In Ephrathah," said Heisenflay, "if a rabbit gave advice, and the advice wasn't accepted, he immediately forgot it, and so did everyone else. Blackavar thought what Hazel decided, and whether it turned out later to be right or wrong was all the same. His own advice had never been given."
"I can believe that," said Bigwig. "Ephrathah, ants led by a dog. But we're not in Ephrathah now. Has he really forgotten that he warned us?"
"Probably he really has. But whether or not, you'd never get him to admit that he warned you or to listen while you told him he'd been right. He could no more do that than pass Hraka underground."
"But you're an Ephrathah. Do you think like that too?"
"I'm a doe," said Heisenflay.
During the early afternoon, they began to approach the belt, and Bigwig was the first to recognize the place where Dandelion had told the story of the Black Rabbit of Inlay.
"It was the same fox, you know," he said to Hazel. "That's almost certain. I ought to have realized how likely it was that..."
"Look here," said Hazel. "You know very well what we owe to you. The does all think El Herrera sent you to get them out of Ephrathah. They believe no one else could have done it. As for what happened this morning, it was my fault as much as yours. But I never supposed we would get home without losing some rabbits. In fact, we've lost 2, and that's better than I expected. We can get back to the honeycomb tonight if we press on. Let's forget about the Homba now, Bigwig. It can't be altered. And try to... Hello? Who's this?"
They were coming to a thicket of juniper and dog roses, tangled at ground level with nettles and trails of bryony, on which the berries were now beginning to ripen and turn red. As they stopped to pick a line into the undergrowth, 4 big rabbits appeared out of the long grass and sat looking down at them. One of the does, coming up the slope a little way behind, stamped and turned to bolt. They heard Blackavar check her sharply.
"Well, why didn't you answer his question, Flaley?"
said one of the rabbits.
"Who am I?"
There was a pause. Then Hazel spoke.
"I can see their Ephrathahs because they're marked," he said. "Is that Woundwort?"
"No," said Blackavar at his shoulder. "That's Captain Campion."
"I see," said Hazel.
"Well, I've heard of you, Campion. I don't know whether you mean us any harm, but the best thing you can do is to let well alone. As far as we're concerned, our dealings with Ephrathah are finished."
"You may think that," replied Campion, "but you'll find it's otherwise. That doe behind you must come with us, and so must any others that are with you."
As he spoke, Silver and Acorn appeared lower down the slope, followed by Thethuthunang. After a glance at the Ephrathahs, Silver spoke quickly to Thethuthunang, who slipped back through the burdocks. Then he came up to Hazel.
"I've sent for the white bird, Hazel,"
he said quietly. As a piece of bluff, it was effective. They saw Campion look upward nervously, and another of the patrol glanced back to the cover of the bushes.
"What you're saying is stupid," said Hazel to Campion. "There are a lot of us here, and unless you've got more rabbits than I can see, we are too many for you."
Campion hesitated. The truth was that for once in his life, he had acted rashly. He had seen Hazel and Bigwig approaching with Blackavar and one doe behind them. In his eagerness to have something really worthwhile to show on his return to the council, he had jumped to the conclusion that they were alone. The Ephrathahs usually kept fairly close together in the open, and it had not occurred to Campion that other rabbits might straggle more widely. He had seen a golden opportunity to attack, perhaps kill, the detestable Thlaley and Blackavar, together with their one companion, who seemed to be lame, and bring the doe back to the council. This he could certainly have done, and he had decided to confront rather than ambush them, in the hope that the bucks would surrender without fighting. But now, as more rabbits began to appear in ones and twos, he realized that he had made a mistake.
"I have a great many more rabbits," he said. "The does must stay here. The rest of you can go. Otherwise, we shall kill you."
Very well, said Hazel. Bring your whole patrol into the open, and we'll do as you say.
By this time, a considerable number of rabbits were coming up the slope. Campion and his patrol looked at them in silence, but made no move.
You'd better stay where you are, said Hazel at length. If you try to interfere with us, it will be the worse for you. Silver and Blackberry, take the does and go on. The rest of us will join you.
Hazel-Ra, whispered Blackavar. The patrol must be killed. All of them. They mustn't report back to the general.
This had also occurred to Hazel. But as he thought of the dreadful fight, and the four Ephrathans actually torn to pieces, for that was what it would mean, he could not find it in his heart to do it. Like Bigwig, he felt a reluctant liking for Campion. Besides, it would take some doing. Quite probably some of his own rabbits would be killed, certainly wounded. They would not reach the honeycomb that night, and they would leave a fresh blood trail wherever they went. Apart from his dislike of the whole idea, there were disadvantages that might be fatal.
No, we'll let them alone, he replied firmly.
Blackavar was silent, and they sat watching Campion as the last of the does disappeared through the bushes.
Now, said Hazel, take your patrol and go the same way that you saw us come. Don't speak. Go.
Campion and the patrol made off downhill, and Hazel, relieved to be rid of them so easily, hurried after Silver, with the others close behind. Once through the belt, they made excellent progress. After the rest of a day and a half, the does were in good shape. The promise of an end to the journey that night, and the thought that they had escaped both the fox and the patrol, made them eager and responsive. The only cause of delay was Blackavar, who seemed uneasy and kept hanging about in the rear. At last, in the late afternoon, Hazel sent for him and told him to go ahead on the line of the path they were following and look out for the long strip of the beach hanger in the dip on the morning side. Blackavar had not been gone very long before he came racing back.
Hazel-Ra, I've been quite close to that wood you spoke of, he said, and there are two rabbits playing about on a patch of short grass just outside it.
I'll come and see, said Hazel. Dandelion, you come too, will you?
As they ran down the hill to the right of the track, Hazel fairly skipped to recognize the beech hanger. He noticed one or two yellow leaves and a faint touch of bronze here and there in the green boughs. Then he caught sight of Buckthorn and Strawberry running toward them across the grass.
Hazel-Ra, cried Buckthorn. Dandelion! What happened? Where are the others? Did you get any does? Is everyone all right?
They'll be here very soon, said Hazel. Yes, we've got a lot of does, and everyone who went has come back. This is Blackavar, who's come out of Ephrafa.
Good for him, said Strawberry. Oh, Hazel-Ra, we've watched at the end of the wood every evening since you went. Holly and Boxwood are all right. They're back at the Warren. And what do you think? Clover's going to kindle. That's fine, isn't it?
Splendid, said Hazel. She'll be the first. My goodness, we've had a time, I can tell you. And so I will. What a story! But it must wait a bit. Come on, let's go and bring the others in.
By sunset, the whole party, 20 rabbits all told, had made their way up the length of the beech hanger and reached the warren. They fared among the dew and the long shadows, with twilight already fallen in the fields below. Then they crowded down into the honeycomb to hear Hazel and Bigwig tell the story of their adventures to those who had waited so eagerly and so long to hear it. As the last rabbits disappeared underground, the wide patrol, which had followed them from Caesar's belt with superlative skill and discipline, veered away in a half-circle to the east and then turned for Ephrafa. Campion was expert at finding a night's refuge in the open. He planned to rest until dawn, and then cover the 3 miles back by evening of the following day. Chapter 41 The Story of Rowsby Woof and the Fairy Wogdog. Be not merciful unto them that offend of malicious wickedness. They grin like a dog and run about through the city. But thou, O Lord, shalt have them in derision.
thou shalt laugh all the heathen to scorn. Psalm 59. Now came the dog days, day after day of hot, still summer, when for hours at a time light seemed the only thing that moved. The sky, sun, clouds, and breeze awake above the drowsing downs. The beech leaves grew darker on the boughs, and fresh grass grew where the old had been nibbled close. The warren was thriving at last, and Hazel could sit basking on the bank and count their blessings. Above and underground, the rabbits fell naturally into a quiet, undisturbed rhythm of feeding, digging, and sleeping. Several fresh runs and burrows were made. The does, who had never dug in their lives before, enjoyed the work. Both Heisenthlay and Thethuthenang told Hazel that they had had no idea how much of their frustration and unhappiness in Ephrathah had been due simply to not being allowed to dig. Even Clover and Haystack found that they could manage pretty well and boasted that they would bear the warren's first litters in burrows that they had dug for themselves. Blackavar and Holly became close friends. They talked a great deal about their different ideas of scouting and tracking, and made some patrols together, more for their own satisfaction than because there was any real need. One early morning, they persuaded Silver to come with them, and travelled over a mile to the outskirts of Kingsclear, returning with a tale of mischief and feasting in a cottage garden. Blackavar's hearing had weakened since the mutilation of his ears, but Holly found that his power of noticing and drawing conclusions from anything unusual was almost uncanny, and that he seemed to be able to become invisible at will. 16 bucks and 10 does made a happy enough society for a warren. There was some bickering here and there, but nothing serious. As Bluebell said, any rabbits who felt discontented could always go back to Ephrathah, and the thought of all that they had faced together was enough to take the sting out of anything that might have made a real quarrel. The contentment of the does spread to everyone else, until one evening Hazel remarked that he felt a perfect fraud as chief rabbit, for there were no problems, and hardly a dispute to be settled.
"Have you thought about the winter yet?" asked Holly.
4 or 5 of the bucks, with Clover, Heisenthlay, and Vilthuril, were feeding along the sunny west side of the hangar about an hour before sunset. It was still hot, and the down was so quiet that they could hear the horses tearing the grass in the paddock of Cannon Heath Farm, more than 1/2 mile away. It certainly did not seem a time to think of winter. "It'll probably be colder up here than any of us have been used to," said Hazel. "But the soil's so light, and the roots break it up so much that we can dig a lot deeper before the cold weather comes. I think we ought to be able to get below the frost. As for the wind, we can block some of the holes and sleep warm. Grass is poor in winter, I know, but anyone who wants a change can always go out with Holly here and try his luck at pinching some green stuff or cattle roots. It's a time of year to be careful of the ale, though. Myself, I shall be quite happy to sleep underground, play bobstones, and hear a few stories from time to time."
"What about a story now?" said Bluebell.
"Come on, Dandelion. How I nearly missed the boat. What about that?"
"Oh, you mean Windward Dismayed," said Dandelion. "That's Bigwig's story. I wouldn't presume to tell it. But it makes a change to be thinking about winter on an evening like this. It reminds me of a story I've listened to, but never tried to tell myself. So some of you may know it, and perhaps some won't. It's a story of Rowsby Woof and the Fairy Wogdog."
"Off you go," said Fiver, "and lay it on thick."
"There was a big rabbit," said Dandelion. "There was a small rabbit. There was Ailerera, and he had the frost in his fine new whiskers. The earth up and down the runs of the warren were so hard that you could cut your paws on it, and the robins answered each other across the bare, still copses. This is my bit here. You go and starve on your own. One evening, when Frith was sinking huge and red in a green sky, Ailerera and Rabscuttle limped trembling through the frozen grass, picking a bite here and there to carry them on for another long night underground. The grass was as brittle and tasteless as hay, and although they were hungry, they'd been making the best of the miserable stuff so long that it was as much as they could do to get it down.
At last, Rabscuttle suggested that they might take a risk for once in a way and slip across the fields to the edge of the village, where there was a big vegetable garden. This particular garden was bigger than any of the others round about. The man who worked in it lived in a house at one end, and he used to dig or cut great quantities of vegetables, put them into a hoodoo, and drive them away. He'd put wire all round the garden to keep rabbits out. All the same, Ailurera could usually find a way in if he wanted to. But it was dangerous, because the man had a gun, and often shot jays and pigeons and hung them up. "It isn't only the gun we'd be risking either," said Ailurera, thinking it over. "We'd have to keep an eye open for that confounded Rowsby Woof as well." Now, Rowsby Woof was the man's dog, and he was the most objectionable, malicious, disgusting brute that ever licked a man's hand. He was a big, woolly sort of animal, with hair all over his eyes, and the man kept him to guard the vegetable garden, especially at night. Rowsby Woof, of course, did not eat vegetables himself, and anyone might have thought that he would be ready to let a few hungry animals have a lettuce or a carrot now and then and no questions asked. But not a bit of it! Rowsby Woof used to run loose from evening till dawn the next day, and not content with keeping men and boys out of the garden, he would go for any animals he found there. Rats, rabbits, hares, mice, even moles, and kill them if he could. The moment he smelled anything in the nature of an intruder, he would start barking and kicking up a shine, although very often it was only this foolish noise which warned a rabbit and enabled him to get away in time. Rowsby Woof was reckoned to be a tremendous ratter, and his master had boasted about this skill of his so often and showed him off so much that he had become revoltingly conceited. He believed himself to be the finest ratter in the world. He ate a lot of raw meat, but not in the evening because he was left hungry at night to keep him active, and this made it rather easier to smell him coming. But even so, he made the garden a dangerous place. "Well, let's chance Rowsby Woof for once," said Rabscuttle. "I reckon you and I ought to be able to give him the slip if we have to." Ailurera and Rabscuttle made their way across the fields to the outskirts of the garden. When they got there, the first thing they saw was the man himself, with a white stick burning away in his mouth, cutting row after row of frosted cabbages. Rowsby Woof was with him, wagging his tail and jumping about in a ridiculous manner. After a time, the man piled as many of the cabbages as he could into a wheel thing and pushed them away to the house. He came back several times, and when he'd taken all the cabbages to the door of the house, he began carrying them inside. "What's he doing that for?" asked Rabscuttle. "I suppose he wants to get the frost out of them tonight," replied Ailurera, "before he takes them away in the hoodoo tomorrow." "They'd be much better to eat with the frost out of them, wouldn't they?" said Rabscuttle. "I wish we could get at them while they're in there. Still, never mind. Now's our chance. Let's see what we can do up this end of the garden while he's busy down there." But hardly had they crossed the top of the garden and got among the cabbages than Rowsby Woof had winded them, and down he came, barking and yelping, and they were lucky to get out in time. "Dirty little beasts," shouted Rowsby Woof. "How, how, how, how dare you come snouting round here? Get out, 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 out!" "Contemptible brute," said Ailurera, as they scurried back to the warren with nothing to show for all their trouble. "He's really annoyed me. I don't know yet how it's going to be done, but by frithinly, before this frost thaws, we'll eat his cabbages inside the house and make him look a fool into the bargain." "That's saying too much, master," said Rabscuttle. "A pity to throw your life away for a cabbage, after all we've done together." "Well, I shall be watching my chance," said Ailurera. "I shall just be watching my chance, that's all." The following afternoon, Rabscuttle was out, nosing along the top of the bank beside the lane, when a hoodoo came by. It had doors at the back these doors had somehow come open and were swinging about as the hoodoo went along. There were things inside wrapped up in bags, like the ones men sometimes leave about the fields, and as the hoodoo passed Rabscuttle, one of these bags fell out into the lane. When the hoodoo had gone, Rabscuttle, who hoped that the bag might have something to eat inside, slipped down into the lane to have a sniff at it. But he was disappointed to find that all it contained was some kind of meat. Later, he told El Herrera about his disappointment. "Meat?" said El Herrera. "Is it still there?" "How should I know?" said Rabscuttle. "Beastly stuff." "Come with me," said El Herrera. "Quickly, do." When they got to the lane, the meat was still there. El Herrera dragged the bag into the ditch and they buried it. "But what good will this be to us, master?" said Rabscuttle. "I don't know yet," said El Herrera, "but some good it will surely be if the rats don't get it. Come home now, though, it's getting dark." As they were going home, they came on an old black wheel covering thrown away from a hoodoo lying in the ditch. "If you've ever seen these things, you'll know that there's something like a huge fungus, smooth and very strong, but pad-like and yielding too. They smell unpleasant and are no good to eat." "Come on," said El Herrera immediately. "We have to gnaw off a good chunk of this. I need it." Rabscuttle wondered whether his master was going mad, but he did as he was told. The stuff had grown fairly rotten, and before long they were able to gnaw off a lump about as big as a rabbit's head. It tasted dreadful, but El Herrera carried it carefully back to the warren. He spent a lot of time that night nibbling at it, and after mourning silfly the next day, he continued. About Neafrith, he woke Rabscuttle, made him come outside, and put the lump in front of him. "What does that look like?" he said. "Never mind the smell. What does it look like?" Rabscuttle looked at it. "It looks rather like a dog's black nose, master," he answered, "except that it's dry." "Splendid," said El Herrera, and went to sleep. It was still frosty, very clear and cold that night, with half a moon, but Fuin Lay, when all the rabbits were keeping warm underground, El Herrera told Rabscuttle to come with him. El Herrera carried the black nose himself, and on the way he pushed it well into every nasty thing he could find. He found out... "Well, never mind," said Hazel. "Go on with the story." "In the end," continued Dandelion, "Rabscuttle kept well away from him, but El Herrera held his breath and still carried the nose somehow until they got to the place where they had buried the meat. "Dig it up," said El Herrera. "Come on." They dug it up and the paper came off. The meat was all bits joined together in a kind of trail like a spray of briny, and poor Rabscuttle was told to drag it along to the bottom of the vegetable garden. It was hard work, and he was glad when he was able to drop it. "Now," said El Herrera, "we'll go round to the front." When they got to the front, they could tell that the man had gone out. For one thing, the house was all dark, but besides, they could smell that he had been through the gate a little while before. The front of the house had a flower garden, and this was separated from the back and the vegetable garden by a high, close-boarded fence that ran right across and ended in a big clump of laurels. Just the other side of the fence was the back door that led into the kitchen. El Herrera and Rabscuttle went quietly through the front garden and peeked through a crack in the fence. Rowsby Woof was sitting on the gravel path, wide awake and shivering in the cold. He was so near that they could see his eyes blink in the moonlight. The kitchen door was shut, but nearby, along the wall, there was a hole above the drain where a brick had been left out. The kitchen floor was made of bricks, and the man used to wash it with a rough broom and sweep the water out through the hole. The hole was plugged up with an old cloth to keep out the cold. After a little while, El Herrera said in a low voice, "Rowsby Woof! Oh, Rowsby Woof!" Rosby Woof sat up and looked about him, bristling. "Who's there?" he said. "Who are you?"
"Oh, Rosby Woof," said Elenira, crouching on the other side of the fence. "Most fortunate, most blessed Rosby Woof, your reward is at hand. I bring you the best news in the world."
"What?" said Rosby Woof. "Who's that? None of your tricks now."
"Tricks, Rosby Woof," said Elenira. "Ah, I see you do not know me. But how should you? Listen, faithful, skillful hound. I am the fairy Wogdog, messenger of the great dog spirit of the East, Queen Dripslobber. Far, far in the East her palace lies. Ah, Rosby Woof, if only you could see her mighty state, the wonders of her kingdom, the carrion that lies far and wide upon the sands, the manure, Rosby Woof, the open sewers. Oh, how you would jump for joy and run nosing all about."
Rosby Woof got to his feet and looked about in silence. He could not tell what to make of the voice, but he was suspicious.
"Your fame as a ratter has come to the ears of the Queen," said Elenira. "We know you and honour you as the greatest ratter in the world. That is why I am here. But, poor, bewildered creature, I see you are perplexed, and well you may be. Come here, Rosby Woof. Come close to the fence and know me better."
Rosby Woof came up to the fence, and Elenira pushed the rubber nose into the crack and moved it about. Rosby Woof stood close, sniffing.
"Noble rat catcher," whispered Elenira. "It is indeed I, the fairy Wogdog, sent to honour you." "Oh, fairy Wogdog," cried Rosby Woof, dribbling and piddling all over the gravel. "Ah, what elegance! What aristocratic distinction! Can that really be decayed cat that I smell, with a delicate overtone of rotten camel? Ah, the gorgeous East!"
"What on earth's camel?" said Bigwig.
"I don't know,"
replied Dandelion, "but it was in the story when I heard it, so I suppose it's some creature or other."
"Happy, happy dog," said Elenira. "I must tell you that Queen Dripslobber, her very self, has expressed her gracious wish that you should meet her. But not yet, Rosby Woof, not yet. First you must be found worthy. I am sent to bring you both a test and a proof. Listen, Rosby Woof. Beyond the far end of the garden there lies a long rope of meat. Aye, real meat, Rosby Woof. For though we are fairy dogs, yet we bring real gifts to noble, brave animals such as you. Go now, find and eat that meat. Trust me, for I will guard the house until you return. That is the test of your belief."
Rosby Woof was desperately hungry, and the cold had got into his stomach, but still he hesitated. He knew that his master expected him to guard the house.
"Ah, well," said Elenira, "never mind. I will depart. In the next village there lives a dog."
"No, no," cried Rosby Woof.
"No, Fairy Wogdog, do not leave me. I trust you. I will go at once. Only guard the house and do not fail me."
"Have no fear, noble hound," said Elenira. "Only trust the word of the great queen." Rosby Woof went bounding away in the moonlight, and Elenira watched him out of sight.
"Are we to go into the house now, master?" asked Rab Scuttle. "We shall have to be quick."
"Certainly not," said Elenira. "How could you suggest such double dealing? For shame, Rab Scuttle! We will guard the house."
They waited silently, and after a while, Rosby Woof returned, licking his lips and grinning. He came sniffing up to the fence.
"I perceive, honest friend," said Elenira, "that you found the meat as swiftly as though it had been a rat. The house is safe and all is well. Now, hark, I shall return to the queen and tell her of all that has passed. It was her gracious purpose that if you showed yourself worthy tonight,
by trusting her messenger, she would herself send for you and honour you. Tomorrow night, she will be passing through this land on her way to the Wolf Festival of the North, and she means to break her journey in order that you may appear before her. Be ready, Rouseby Woof.
Oh, Fairy Wogdog, cried Rouseby Woof, what joy it will be to grovel and abase myself before the Queen. How humbly I shall roll upon the ground. How utterly shall I make myself her slave? What menial cringing will be mine? I will show myself a true dog.
I do not doubt it, said Elenera. And now, farewell! Be patient and await my return. He withdrew the rubber nose, and very quietly they crept away. The following night was, if anything, still colder. Even Elenera had to pull himself together before he could set out over the fields. They had hidden the rubber nose outside the garden, and it took them some time to get it ready for Rouseby Woof. When they had made sure that the man had gone out, they went cautiously into the front garden and up to the fence. Rouseby Woof was padding up and down outside the back door, his breath steaming in the frosty air. When Elenera spoke, he put his head on the ground between his front paws and whined for joy.
The Queen is coming, Rouseby Woof, said Elenera from behind the nose, with her noble attendants, the fairies Postwhittle and Sniffbottom, and this is her wish. You know the crossroads in the village, do not?
Yes, yes, whined Rouseby Woof. Yes, yes. Oh, let me show you how abject I can be, dear Fairy Wogdog.
I will. Very well, said Elenera. Now, oh, fortunate dog, go to the crossroads and await the Queen. She's coming on the wings of night. It is far that she must come, but wait patiently. Only wait. Do not fail her, and great blessing will be yours.
Fail her? No, no, cried Rouseby Woof. I will wait like a worm upon the road. Her beggar am I, Fairy Wogdog, her mendicant, her idiot, her...
Quite right, most excellent, said Elenera. Only make haste.
As soon as Rouseby Woof had gone, Elenera and Rabscuttle went quickly through the laurels, round the end of the fence and along to the back door. Elenera pulled the cloth out of the hole above the drain with his teeth and led the way into the kitchen. The kitchen was as warm as this bank, and at one end was a great pile of vegetables ready for the hrududu in the morning, cabbages, Brussels sprouts and parsnips. They were thawed out and the delicious smell was quite overpowering. Elenera and Rabscuttle began at once to make amends for the past days of frozen grass and tree bark.
"Good, faithful fellow," said Elenera, with his mouth full. "How grateful he will be to the Queen for keeping him waiting. He will be able to show her the full extent of his loyalty, won't he? Have another parsnip, Rabscuttle."
Meanwhile, down at the crossroads, Rouseby Woof waited eagerly in the frost, listening for the coming of Queen Dripslobber. After a long time, he heard footsteps. They were not the steps of a dog, but of a man. As they came near, he realized that they were the steps of his own master. He was too stupid to run away or hide, but merely remained where he was until his master, who was returning home, came up to the crossroads.
"Why, Rouseby Woof," said his master, "what are you doing here?"
Rouseby Woof looked foolish and nosed about. His master was puzzled. Then a thought came to him.
"Why, good old chap," he said, "you came to meet me, did you? Good fellow, then. Come on, we'll go home together."
Rouseby Woof tried to slip away, but his master grabbed him by the collar, tied him by a bit of string he had in his pocket, and led him home. Their arrival took Elenera by surprise. In fact, he was so busy stuffing cabbage that he heard nothing until the door handle rattled. He and Rabscuttle had only just time to slip behind a pile of baskets before the man came in, leading Roseby Woof. Roseby Woof was quiet and dejected, and did not even notice the smell of rabbit, which anyway was all mixed up with the smell of the fire in the larder. He lay on the mat while the man made some sort of drink for himself. Elerera was watching his chance to dash out of the hole in the wall. But the man, as he sat drinking and puffing away at a white stick, suddenly looked round and got up. He had noticed the draught coming in through the open hole. To the rabbit's horror, he picked up a sack and plugged the hole up very tightly indeed. Then he finished his drink, made up the fire, and went away to sleep, leaving Roseby Woof shut in the kitchen. Evidently, he thought it too cold to turn him out for the night. At first, Roseby Woof whined and scratched at the door, but after a time, he came back to the mat by the fire and lay down. Elerera moved very quietly along the wall until he was behind a big metal box in the corner under the sink. There were sacks and old papers here too, and he felt fairly sure that Roseby Woof could not manage to see behind it. As soon as Rabscuttle had joined him, he spoke. "Oh, Roseby Woof," whispered Elerera. Roseby Woof was up in a flash. "Fairy Wogdog," he cried. "Is that you I hear?" "It is indeed," said Elerera. "I am sorry for your disappointment, Roseby Woof. You did not meet the Queen." "Alas, no," said Roseby Woof, and he told what had happened at the crossroads. "Never mind," said Elerera. "Do not be downhearted, Roseby Woof. There was good reason why the Queen did not come. She received news of danger, great danger, Roseby Woof, and avoided it in time. I myself am here at the risk of my own safety to warn you. You are lucky indeed that I am your friend, for otherwise your good master must have been stricken with mortal plague."
"With plague?" cried Roseby Woof.
"Oh, how, good fairy! Many fairies and spirits there are in the animal kingdoms of the East," said Elerera. "Some are friends, and there are those, may misfortune strike them down, who are our deadly enemies. Worst of them all, Roseby Woof, is the great rat spirit, the giant of Sumatra, the curse of Hamelin. He dares not openly fight our noble queen, but he works by stealth, by poison, by disease. Soon after you left me, I learned that he has sent his hateful rat goblins through the clouds, carrying sickness. I warned the queen, but still I remained here, Roseby Woof, to warn you. If the sickness falls, and the goblins are very near, it will harm not you, but your master it will slay, and me too, I fear. You can save him, and you alone. I cannot."
"Oh, horror!" cried Roseby Woof. "There is no time to be lost. What must I do, Fairy Wogdog?"
"The sickness works by a spell," said Elerera. "But if a real dog of flesh and blood could run four times round the house, barking as loudly as he could, then the spell would be broken, and the sickness would have no power. But alas, I forgot. You are shut in, Roseby Woof. What is to be done? I fear that all is lost."
"No, no," said Roseby Woof. "I will save you, Fairy Wogdog, and my dear master too. Leave it to me."
Roseby Woof began to bark. He barked to raise the dead. The windows shook. The coal fell on the grate. The noise was terrifying. They could hear the man upstairs shouting and cursing. Still Roseby Woof barked. The man came stamping down. He flung open the window and listened for thieves, but he could hear nothing, partly because there was nothing to hear, and partly because of the ceaseless barking. At last, he picked up his gun, flung open the door, and went cautiously out to see what was the matter. Out shot Roseby Woof, bellowing like a bull, and tore around the house. The man followed him at a run, leaving the door wide. "Quick," said Elerera, "quicker than Wogdog from the Tartar's bow. Come on!" Elerera and Rabscuttle dashed into the garden and disappeared through the laurels. In the field beyond, they paused for a moment. From behind came the sounds of yelping and woofing,
mixed with shouts and angry cries of, "Come here, damn you!"
"Noble fellow," said Elerida, "he has saved his master, Rabscuttle. He has saved us all. Let us go home and sleep sound in our burrow."
For the rest of his life, Roseby Woof never forgot the night when he had waited for the great dog queen. True, it was a disappointment, but this, he felt, was a small matter compared with the recollection of his own noble conduct and of how he had saved both his master and the good fairy Wog Dog from the wicked rat spirit.
Chapter 42. News at Sunset. You will be sure to prove that the act is unjust and hateful to the gods. Yes, indeed, Socrates, at least, if they will listen to me. Plato, Euthyphro. As he came to the end of his story, Dandelion remembered that he was supposed to be relieving Acorn as sentry. The post was a little way away, near the eastern corner of the wood, and Hazel, who wanted to see how Boxwood and Speedwell were getting on with the hole they were digging, went with Dandelion along the foot of the bank. He was just going down the new hole when he noticed that some small creature was pattering about in the grass. It was the mouse that he had saved from the kestrel. Pleased to see that he was still safe and sound, Hazel turned back to have a word with him. The mouse recognized him and sat up, washing his face with his front paws and chattering effusively.
"It's a good day, a hot day, you like. Plenty for eat, keep a warm, is a no trouble. Down in a bottom of hill is a harvest, I go for a corn. But there's a long way. I think you will go away. It's a not a long, and you will come back, yes?"
"Yes," said Hazel. "A lot of us went away, but we found what we were looking for, and now we've come back for good."
"It's a good. There's a lots of rabbits a now. Keep a grass a short."
"What difference does it make to him if the grass is short?" said Bigwig, who, with Blackavar, was lolloping and nibbling close by. "He doesn't eat it."
"It's a good to forget about it, you know," said the mouse, in a familiar tone which made Bigwig shake his ears with irritation. "It's a run along the creek. But it's a no seeds from a shorter grass. Now is a warren a here. And now a today is a new rabbits a come. Soon is another warren a more. New rabbits is a your friends a too?"
"Yes, yes, all friends," said Bigwig, turning away. "There was something I wanted to say, Hazel, about the newborn rabbits when they're ready to come above ground."
Hazel, however, had remained where he was, looking intently at the mouse. "Wait a moment, Bigwig," he said. "What did you say, mouse, about another warren? Where is there going to be another warren?" The mouse was surprised.
"You not know? Not your friends?"
"I don't know until you tell me. What did you mean about new rabbits and another warren soon?"
His tone was urgent and inquisitive. The mouse became nervous, and after the manner of his kind, began to say what he thought the rabbits would like to hear.
"Maybe it's a no warren. It's a plenty good rabbits here. It's all of my friends. It's a no more rabbits. Not a for want other rabbits."
"But what other rabbits?" persisted Hazel.
"No, sir. No, sir. No other rabbits. It's a not to go for sooner rabbits. All stay here, my friends. A saving me a very good of my life. Said how can I, if she make me?"
twittered the mouse. Hazel considered this lot briefly, but it beat him.
"Oh, come on, Hazel," said Bigwig. "Let the poor little beast alone. I want to talk to you."
Hazel ignored him. Going close to the mouse, he bent his head and spoke quietly and firmly.
"You've often said you're our friend," he said. "If you are, tell me, and don't be afraid what you know about other rabbits coming."
The mouse looked confused. Then he said,
"I not see other rabbits, sir, but my brother he say Yellowhammer say is a new rabbits, plenty, plenty rabbits, come to coom over on a morning side. Maybe it's a lot of rubbish. I tell you are wrong. You no like a mouse for more, not a friend a more."
"No, that's all right," said Hazel. "Don't worry, just tell me again. Where did the bird say
these new rabbits were.
"'E say is a come just a now on a morning side. I'll not a see.'
"'Good fellow,' said Hazel. "'That's very helpful.' He turned back to the others. "'What to make of this, Bigwig?' he asked.
"'Not much,' answered Bigwig. "'Long grass rumours. These little creatures say anything and change it five times a day. Ask him again, Fu Inlay. He'll tell you something else.'
"'If you're right, then I'm wrong and we can all forget it,' said Hazel. "'But I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Someone must go and see. I'd go myself, but I've got no speed with this leg.'
"'Well, leave it for tonight, anyway,' said Bigwig. "'We can—'
"'Someone must go and see,' repeated Hazel firmly. "'A good patroller, too. Blackover, go and get Holly for me, will you?'
"'I'm here as it happens,' said Holly, who'd come along the top of the bank while Hazel was speaking. "'What's the trouble, Hazel Ra?'
"'There's a rumour of strangers on the down, on the morning side,' replied Hazel. "'And I wish I knew more. Can you and Blackavar run over that way, say, as far as the top of the coombe, and find out what's going on?'
"'Yes, of course, Hazel Ra,' said Holly. "'If there really are some other rabbits there, we'd better bring them back with us, hadn't we? We could do with a few more.'
"'It depends who they are,' said Hazel. "'That's what I want to find out. Go at once, Holly, will you? Somehow it worries me not to know.'
Holly and Blackavar had hardly set off when Speedwell appeared above ground. He had an excited, triumphant look which attracted everyone's attention immediately. He squatted in front of Hazel and looked round him in silence to make sure of his effect.
"'You've finished the hole?' asked Hazel.
"'Never mind the hole,' answered Speedwell. "'I didn't come up to say that. Clover's had her litter. All good, healthy kittens. 3 bucks and 3 does, she says.'
"'You'd better go up in the beech tree and sing that,' said Hazel. "'See that everybody knows. But tell them not to go crowding down, disturbing her.'
"'I shouldn't think they would,' said Bigwig. "'Who'd be a kitten again, or even want to see one? Blind and deaf and no fur?'
"'Some of the does may want to see them,' said Hazel. "'They're excited, you know. "'But we don't want Clover disturbed into eating them "'or anything miserable like that.'
"'It looks as though we really are going to live a natural life again at last, doesn't it?' "'said Bigwig, as they browsed their way along the bank. "'What a summer it's been. "'I keep dreaming I'm back in Ephrafa, you know. "'But it'll pass off, I suppose. "'One thing I brought back out of that place, though, "'and that's the value of keeping a warren hidden.' As we get bigger, Hazel, we ought to take care of that. We'll do better than Ephrafa, though. When we've reached the right size, rabbits can be encouraged to leave.
Well, don't you leave, said Hazel, or I'll tell Kahar to bring you back by the scruff of the neck. I'm relying on you to produce us a really good ousler.
It's certainly something to look forward to, said Bigwig. Take a pack of young fellows across to the farm and chase the cats out of the barn to get an appetite. Well, it'll come. I say, this grass is as dry as horsehair on barbed wire, isn't it? What about a run down the hill to the fields? Just you and I and Fiver. Corn's been cut, you know, and there should be good pickings. I expect they're going to burn off the field, but they haven't done it yet.
No, we must wait a bit, said Hazel. I want to hear what Holly and Blackover have to say when they come in.
That needn't keep you long, replied Bigwig. Here they come already. Unless I'm much mistaken. Strike down the open track, too. Not bothered about keeping hidden, are they? What a rate they're going.
There's something wrong, said Hazel, staring at the approaching rabbits. Holly and Blackavar reached the long shadow of the wood at top speed, as though they were being pursued. The watchers expected them to slow down as they came to the bank, but they kept straight on and appeared actually to be going to run underground. At the last moment, Holly stopped, looked about him and stamped twice. Blackavar disappeared down the nearest hole. At the stamping, all the rabbits above ground ran for cover.
"'Here, wait a minute,'
said Hazel, pushing past Pipkin and Hawkbit as they came across the grass. "'Holly, what's the alarm? Tell us something instead of stamping the place to pieces. What's happened?'
"'Get the holes filled in,' gasped Holly. "'Get everyone underground. There's not a moment to lose.'
His eyes rolled white, and he panted foam over his chin.
"'Is it men or what? There's nothing to be seen, heard, or smelled. Come on, tell us something and stop gibbering. There's a good chap.'
"'It'll have to be quick, then,'
said Holly. That coom is full of rabbits from Ephrathah.
From Ephrathah? Fugitives, do you mean?
No, said Holly, not fugitives.